Time. Time is a funny thing. The past. The future. It all gets mixed up. There's only one way to keep it straight. Always remember who you are.
Junk, junky, junk, shut up! Get out of here! All right. Junk, junky, junk, junky, junky, junk, junky, junk, 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 junky, junk.
Welcome to Cord Killers Reckoning. The world of entertainment is turned upside down, and we're just trying to find out how to watch what we want, when we want, whenever we want. I'm Tom Merritt. Where's the good stuff, Brian?
Oh, my goodness. I think the good stuff is legitimately going to be the Netflix original Avatar The Last Airbender adaptation, which if I know this would normally be more of an after-talk thing, but time and time again, any animated feature or beautiful piece of animated anything, wow, do people want to be instantly resistant to any adaptation into real life. Have you noticed that?
It's become a thing, right? And it reminds me of every other adaptation until they got good. So I kind of feel like we just need a couple of really good adaptations and then people will be fine with it. But until then, it will be, no, you can never do it right. I've been burned before, or people have told me they've been burned before and I don't trust it. That's where folks are with it. I'll be honest, I have never watched the animated version of Avatar The Last Airbender beyond a couple of episodes. I've seen like three or four episodes. So I look at this and I'm like, this looks great. This looks like a good thing. But that's usually the problem, right? If you're not attached to the original source material, then you don't care.
This is also one of the curious instances where, like, it is the textbook definition of, like, what was it, the M. Night Shyamalan version that was widely considered to be a gross misinterpretation of everything that was great about the original. However, this one on Netflix is being done by the original people who created Avatar The Last Airbender. I get into these arguments with my kids all the time, and I'm like, I'm sorry. Should they have never adapted Appa into a plushie doll that you love every night?
Like, fine. Oh, Dad, why are you? That's different.
Yeah. but nobody seems to be able to articulate why that's different, and that's what's strange to me. My line was, and always shall be, keep trying, guys. Maybe this time you'll invent something
not?
Better.
Yeah, exactly. I know I was gone last week.
Mm.
Did I miss anything?
Well, if you did hypothetically, I would say that if you're a patron, you would know the entire story.
Oh, that's the problem. I'm not a patron of our own show.
Okay. I've actually run into that same problem. But until then,
something seems different, but I'm sure I'll figure out what it is. It's probably nothing. Let's go on a supply run.
Oh, that's the one. There we go. Okay. Wait, I double clicked. There we go. Supply run. There we go.
Supply run. Hooray.
Seemed weird somehow. Anyway,
not to the visual watchers. They all saw exactly what they always see.
Let's forecast how our supply chain will go now that the actors' strike is over. Brian, how did you celebrate the end of the actors' strike when you heard? Where were you when you heard it ended?
I was in deep contemplation as to what is going to happen next. although I will say a quick side jag, I don't know that we've discussed this either on or offline. I listened to the Economist podcast and they brought up the idea of one of the victories of the whole strike for SAG was around AI. and it brought up the idea of an Omnistar.
I was going to save that for next week's supply run.
Oh,
like because I heard that same. I heard that same podcast.
And the guest full on said, yeah, we just made that up. Basically, there were stars who were afraid of radio and television and movies, and guess what they became? Megastars. Now there are megastars who are afraid of AI stuff. Guess what they're going to be? Omnistars.
Yeah, and the idea, and maybe we will still talk about it next week, because there's a lot to dive into, and we've got to get to the effects of the strike for folks here. But the idea that usually when technology comes along, everybody is afraid it's going to ruin everything, radio, television, etc. And what happens is it usually makes it easier for people on either end. It's only bad for people in the middle. So the superstars got superstarrier when television came along, and the actors who wanted to get into the game had more opportunities when television came along. It was the folks in the middle that lost out. And The Economist is making the same argument for AI, saying AI is going to help megastars collect all kinds of royalties because there'll be even more ways to use their likeness. And so, yes, you need to have these fights to get copyright laws in place and likeness laws in place and agreements and everything, but they're going to rake it in. Also, AI going to make it easier than ever for someone to start making something because the AI can assist them. It's the people in the middle that end up not benefiting as much. I don't think even the people in the middle benefit, just not as much as the people at the ends.
Well, and also, I just realized I hit a space bar, and I'm pretty sure I just deleted your entire opening segment. Sorry about that. I'm going to hit undo. I don't know why.
That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, there we go. Okay, it's back.
Something's different. Oh, anyway, let's talk about the effects of the strike. We had 6 months of nothing being produced because of first the writers, then the actors, right? So even though the writers could get back, you couldn't start production without the actors. That is longer than COVID shut down productions in 2020. Series generally need about 3 to 6 weeks prep and pre-production before they resume shooting. So the earliest date a show could possibly return would be November 27th. It looks like the Chicago series, the Law and Order franchises for NBC, the FBI series from CBS probably aren't going to come back November 27th, but they're going to try to come back as soon as possible and deliver 12 episodes this season. A start in January would deliver 10 episodes for series, which is going to be enough for some. The first shows to return to production are probably going to be Grey's Anatomy, Criminal Minds, Evolution, 911, Tracker, Night Court, The Rookie, NCIS, and Ghosts, in addition to the Chicago Law & Order FBI series we mentioned earlier. CBS has announced its new seasons will start February 12th, right after the Super Bowl. That will make for a 3.5-month season of 10 to 13 episodes per series. Streaming series, less calendar bound. Netflix certainly wants to get back to Stranger Things and get it up and running as soon as possible. It was about to start production 6 months ago. Deadline says that the following streaming series are on the fast track. You'll be glad to hear Hacks is back in production. I mean, The Penguin, Welcome to Derry, Hysteria, The Old Man, Yellowstone, and Mayor of Kingstown. Also, because they were overseas, some have kind of been on simmer, even though not all of their production was back. So Netflix's Emily in Paris and Amazon's Étoile look like they can get back to full strength in time for early 2024 restarts. Most new series, though, like brand new, we're going to premiere a brand new series. It's not a second season, are going to be delayed until late 2024, possibly 2025. Movie-wise, some delays that had already been announced. Marvel has a few decisions. Deadpool 3 will get back to filming by Thanksgiving, and it moves its premiere date from May 3rd to July 26th. So you'll get Deadpool July 26th. That pushes Captain America Brave New World to February 14th, 2025. Thunderbolts moves from December 2024 to July 25th, 2025. Blade goes from February 25th to November 7th, 2025, and Mufasa, the Lion King prequel, is a movie. Maybe you forgot about it. It moves from July to December 20th, 2024 of next year. There's a bunch of other stuff Brian, but that's kind of the effects part of this. We also have the contract to talk about.
Well, so I like to be a sunny side up kind of optimist. And
yeah, like yeah, on a toast.
The two things that strike out, we've been talking over the last few months about how real breakthroughs have happened during terrible times of strikes because they had to rely on spec scripts. That means speculative scripts. You write a script and you have no idea if you're going to get paid or not. That's where Darmok showed up on the Next Generation of Star Trek and so on. Another thing that I'm optimistic about is I've heard from a lot of people, every time I bring up a really good show, for example, I was horrified that a friend of mine still hadn't seen Andor. And I was just like, what? And if nothing else, the opportunity for a year and a half or so for us to all take a deep breath and finally get caught up on our Andors and so on might be an okay thing. What's your read on it?
It does. I wonder where the gap is because I certainly didn't feel it this fall. There was Loki and For All Mankind came back and it didn't feel like we were having a pause. Now that's because those were finished producing before the strikes began. I'm curious when we're going to feel the pause. If I were somebody who watched broadcast television, I'd be feeling it right now, right? Because a lot of those shows did not come back. I wonder if streaming will just be able to kind of paper over the pause or if my own changed habits mean I don't miss any of this stuff and not having it available just means that I am further induced to create my own viewing habits independent of what the production companies would like me to do.
I don't know what it means, but I suspect the latter. I suspect that the respect that people have for excellent peak television type content is so high right now that it will be more like, well, I guess I'll go to the library. That'll be fine.
I mean, I found myself enjoying YouTube series that I probably wouldn't have had time for. You called that shot 6 months ago, I remember. And, you know, I am definitely a devotee of a bunch of shows that I would never have started watching otherwise. So I don't know how I'm one piece of data. I don't know how prevalent that'll be, but yeah, so that's an effect I've seen in myself anyway.
I suspect that... I didn't know that you wanted to hold off for another week for the AI discussion.
Oh, yeah, no, but that's fine. Because I was thinking, we could do a whole segment on that. And like I said, we still can. So go ahead, because that does tie in right into the contract details.
Let's hold off on the general AI discussion and the idea of the Omnistar, which I think there's really something to. But instead, let's talk about the other victories and just how much of a victory they are. Certainly, the victory of greater rights to residuals from streaming services is a victory for SAG.
So do you want the details on that?
Please, please.
The actors did not get a percentage. That is one thing they had pushed for was a percentage.
Whoops.
Instead, there's a participation bonus. The bonus will be worth a total of $40 million for everyone in the contract. It's a residual that will be calculated based on the success of a streaming show. So there's a $40 million pot, and that'll get adjusted over time. But this first year, there'll be a $40 million pot that will be divided up. 75% of residuals calculated under this bonus will go to actors on the most watched shows. 25% goes to a fund to distribute broadly among actors on all streaming shows. So this sets the stage for sharing streaming residuals so that actors could ask for larger amounts or actual percentages in the future. So they agreed to do it this way to start, knowing we can expand on it in future negotiations.
Can I say something that some of our audience and maybe you will find fairly astonishing?
Yes, let's see. Now that you set it up, I'm going to try my best not to be astonished, Brian.
That sounds like a pretty good idea because Hollywood has always been, if you've researched.
I'm kind of already astonished that you think a pot instead of a percentage is a good idea. Yeah, Carrie, go ahead.
Well, because Hollywood 100 years ago was truly horrific, right? And there are people who leave their hometowns just trying to be great, and not all of them win in the Las Vegas of Hollywood. Mm. If what you want is to make it, like, if the deal is come out to Hollywood, play the game, if you win or if you lose, you'll at least have food in your belly. If you win, you'll be paying the tax of having gambled in Hollywood or whatever. The libertarian in me is very conflicted about this, mm-hmm. but ultimately I can find solace in the fact that this is not government mandated. These are two private parties that are agreeing to what their game is. And as somebody who loves to go to Las Vegas and on purpose gamble rude about amounts of money, not because I expect to win, but because I love pissing everybody off at the table, I kind of am on board with this. Is that weird?
It's surprising to me, but now that you've talked me through it, I get it. I get where you're coming from. I think the biggest hurdle here is that the old model was, oh, well, you got a 10 rating. That means you sold ads at this CPM, which means you made this much money. So my residuals should be X. And in syndication, you'll get a smaller rating and the CPM will be lower. So my residuals should be Y. That was a fairly straightforward piece of math. In streaming, we don't operate that way. So I pay $20 a month for Max, and I watch whatever I watch. How do you then have to calculate, like, well, Tom spent 10% of his time watching, you know, Hacks and another, you know, and then do all of that math? I mean, I suppose you could. I think what the streaming services are going to say is, that's really not how the money is made. The money isn't made on a show. The money is made on the cumulative effect of shows keeping Tom interested so that he stays subscribed. And I'm not sure how you properly put a percentage on that, which is why I think where we ended up here was, well, the amount of money that we make in a year, this is your share. Let's divide it up and we'll give a bunch of it to the most successful folks. But rather than try to slice and dice finely, you know, who did well at the tail end, we'll just divide it up amongst everybody.
We already have, I believe, a precedent for this in YouTube Premium, where you never see an ad if you're subscribed to YouTube Premium.
Right.
But instead, there's like, here's where an ad would normally go. How much money are we making on other ads? Let's divvy that up. Like it's maybe that's why I'm a little bit understanding of this arrangement, because I've seen it before.
No, that's true. I didn't even think about the whole, you know, YouTube creator precedent of, oh, you get paid on minutes when it's from a premium subscriber, and you get paid on ad impressions from a free subscriber.
Well, and on top of that, I have no knowledge of this from the inside, but I would imagine that you're also being paid a little bit on how many subscribers that you attract, how many viewer minute, how sticky your content is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I think this does show that we have a lot of work to do ourselves, Brian.
Yeah, dude, I don't even know how to work this board yet.
I mean, it doesn't look that way. It looks like you know how to use it. Like, I talk, and then my face gets bigger, and then I stop talking, and then you show up. It's magic. I don't know that you could put a price on that, Brian.
I can, and it's the highest price yet.
Ah, the greatest sacrifice.
$3.60 is
that? That's right. That's right. As was written in the Bible,
John 3:16. For he who so loved Patreon did give to cord killers $3.60 per episode. Didn't really translate from the Greek.
No, no, but it's what it says. Just trust us, have faith in us, and support us at Patreon. Patreon.com/cordkillers. Because you know what?
Go ahead. I feel like we go ahead. Go ahead. Say it, Tom. Say it. Say it like Brian ain't doing so great at the live switching right now. And we would really like to hire someone. And now's a really good time to up your
pledge. I wasn't going to say that directly, but folks, you know, you decide. You decide. Do you want to do this to Brian? Do you want to put him through this? That's it. It's your call. It's all in your hands. Well, he's up for it, man. He's up for the challenge.
I am. And you could support the challenge by going to patreon.com/cordkillers.
Right.
Keep us loud, live, and independent. I cannot precisely promise anything as far as whether everybody just may be about to get everything free. but we don't know. The bigger the Patreon is, the more precise everything will be. Zoidberg. I just did a...
Why not Patreon?
Patreon.com/
Horde Killers. And now we will go on a search party.
Oh, you're so darn right. It's so hard to not steal Justin Robert Young's character of Captain Morgan. the search party
for search party is underway.
Okay, hold on. Yep. That's okay. Not it. All right. That's not
keep
it.
Searching.
Yeah, this is the search party introduction where Brian tries to figure out where the search party is. Oh,
how did you even make that happen?
I don't. I'm just pressing buttons, my man.
I say that was it. Search party. Starting next month, you'll be able to access Hulu shows from within Disney Plus. Remember, Bob Iger said he was going to do it. Well, guess what? He did it. It's similar to how you can get ESPN Plus inside Hulu. A beta of the app will be ready in December. Disney has said that Hulu and Disney Plus will remain as separate apps as well. So if you don't want to use Hulu in Disney Plus, you can still use it on its own. Parents will be able to set up parental controls and profiles, just like any other streaming service. And if you're curious, Disney Plus reached 150 million subscribers worldwide last quarter. That's up from 146.7 last quarter. 112.6 million of that is Disney Plus. 37.6 million is India's Disney Plus Hotstar. Hulu, which is just the U.S., by the way, everywhere else had already got their stuff shoved into Disney Plus. Hulu had 48.5 million in the U.S. ESPN Plus had 26 million. And, Brian, Disney said it won't, quote, chase bucks by licensing out Marvel, Pixar, or Star Wars content. But anything else is up for grabs. They're up for a deal. They're talking to Netflix to continue licensing deals. They'll license all day long, just not their best stuff.
Okay, first of all, for the video viewers, apologies that you just spent the last 3 minutes watching me stroke my beard and contemplate what you were saying. branding talk only. What do you do with Hulu at this point? Do you fold it under? Oh, doggone it. All right. this is what happens. You either get me thinking about the subject or you get me switching effectively.
Yeah.
We're learning. Yes,
no, this is definitely the question that you're asking, for sure.
The question is, do you fold Hulu underneath the Disney Plus umbrella? And we've gotten a number of people saying, Brian, you keep saying that Disney is incompatible with adult entertainment, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But Disney Plus is a different animal. Like, should Disney Plus be under Hulu, or should Hulu be under Disney Plus?
I think either one is fine. From a practical standpoint, it's easier to have everything in one app. When I discovered my ESPN Plus stuff was in Hulu, I kind of liked it. I was like, oh, I don't have to remember to go out and open ESPN. I also like that they kept the ESPN Plus app around and said, you know what, if you just want the sports, that's a more focused version. I don't know if you need Hulu separately. So I will be watching to see which direction they go. Because right now we're going to have a triangle. Hulu stuff will be in Disney Plus. ESPN Plus stuff will be in Hulu. Do they also put ESPN Plus in Disney? That's kind of where I think they're going. And they're going to do what Max is. This is not unprecedented. Max is everything from Warner Brothers Discovery in one app. I think that's where Disney's going. Maybe they'll change the name at some point. Disney, however, is the best brand in the world, you know, or at least among them. So I think it would be weird if they changed their Disney Plus app to be called Hulu. Even though most people do know what Hulu is, it doesn't mean the same. It doesn't have the ring and the depth the way Disney does.
That's
so,
an interesting question, is whether or not, like, from for lack of a better term, a pride perspective, could Disney Plus be supplicant to the Hulu brand? Because that would actually functionally give Disney more power by being like, oh, well, if we're in trouble for anything, it's, you know, our boss Hulu, even though we own everything. Like, I can't picture Disney Plus taking on a Hulu channel the way they did National Geographic or Marvel or Star Wars, et cetera, et cetera.
No, but they would do an FX channel on Disney Plus, which is essentially what they've been laying the groundwork for.
You stole my punchline. Yes.
Sorry.
No. Because no, the strongest the stuff, right? Is on FX. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you take most of your Hulu stuff and you put it under that brand, or you can modify that brand or something. But yeah, I think that's where they're going. I think they're going to move everything into Disney Plus. They're going to get people used to that. I wouldn't be shocked a couple of years down the road if there's Disney Kids, where they say, you know, guess what? Just like YouTube has a YouTube Kids app, we're going to have a Disney Kids app for all of you who are like, no, I just want one app where I don't have to worry about parental controls. And that will be what was in Disney Plus at launch, basically.
Let me give you a pro example and a con example. The pro example would be Epcot, the theme park, turned out to be not at all what Disney expected to have it be. But by and far, the most popular event that Epcot does is their Food and Wine Festival, where you drink wine and booze and eat foods from, you know, Madagascar and all over the world. So that would be a case of the pro side. The anti side would be Disney also had a theme park called Pleasure Island, which was awesome. Awesome beyond words. It was like, I don't know, four dance clubs. Like, you like salsa dancing, go over here. If you like techno dancing, go over here. Nobody went anywhere. They went to two places. They went to the improv comedy club that they had, and they went to a magical place called the Adventurers Club, where it was like you were time traveling back to 1920s, and they would tell you, they would regale you with tales of tigers and interesting beverages from around the world. So I don't know which one will win out, but mm-hmm. I do know that the one time that they tried to make it a twofer, it didn't work out so hot.
In the parks.
In the parks, which I am using as a proxy for the general branding. Yeah.
Well, cordkillers@gmail.com. Let us know where you think this is headed. Inside Out 2 released a trailer featuring a new emotion. If you don't remember, Inside Out was the one where all the different emotions got together to operate the child, because we don't have free will. Well, at least that's what I took from them. Anyway, anxiety is the new emotion. It was this trailer releasing anxiety into the world of Inside Out was viewed 157 million times in 24 hours, making it Disney's biggest animated trailer launch ever. Inside Out 2 coming a year from now. It's not coming until June 14th, 2024.
So, Tom.
I guess that's closer to a half year, but still, not coming until next summer.
Let me begin by saying, like I cannot argue with the numbers. Obviously, a lot of people clicked on the buttons to see the thing.
Anxiety is a hot buzzword these days.
Are you eager to go out into the world and sit in a movie theater to watch a movie about anxiety? Is that what we're selling now? I'd rather watch Rage 10 times over because that's what I feel.
They also hinted that there are other emotions, so I think we're going to get more trailers. I think anxiety is hip, which I find puzzling as someone who literally this morning had to fight off an anxiety attack. Nothing hip about it, but it has got cachet in the culture. And so there's me and you, Brian, and other people in our audience who are like, yeah, anxiety, not a fun thing. Why would you go want to watch that? And then there are people who are like, oh, anxiety, me and my friends, we all joke about it and talk about the Sunday scaries, and it's so of the moment. And so having it represented in the movie sounds fun, you know, like finally we're getting to see it. And I think that's probably what touched the nerve. I don't know.
So instead of like along the same axis, like there's nothing fun about experiencing rage, you know, there's nothing fun about experiencing sad or whatever. But in terms of intimacy, I actually do think, like, you know, buy stock in anxiety because I don't know if you heard, the world's been through a moment, maybe going through a moment right now.
And honestly, Whistle 034 makes a great point. I can see why it may be hip to hear that lots of others suffer the same. So there's a little bit of that validation to be seen. I mean, we talk about representation in the world in a lot of ways. In a weird way, this is that, right? To be like, oh, that's my emotion up there. Well, I think some people feel that.
As the kids put it, I feel seen. You know, my God, do we all feel seen? If there's a movie about like, hi, you know, those guys, I'm new. Maybe you've never experienced me before. I'm anxiety. And everyone's like, oh, my God, I know exactly. Tell me more. Tell me more. How can I deal with you? What are you like?
I also think that the fact that this is the Inside Out human character going through puberty, basically, and learning embarrassment and ennui and all of the emotions we grapple with as teenagers, that's probably ringing with a lot of people too, of like, oh, this is going from a sweet child story to a more real adult-ish oriented story.
Well, and keep in mind also that the number of people watching a thing is not an indication of how well the box office receipts will be for a thing.
True.
Because I too would be very interested to see how they represent anxiety.
Nintendo is teaming up with Sony Pictures to make a live action film based on The Legend of Zelda video games.
Never heard of it.
It's about a guy named Zelda. No, I'm kidding. Zelda's the princess. We all know that. Link is the guy with the arrows. Shigeru Miyamoto and Avi Arad of the Spider-Man trilogy. Shigeru Miyamoto created The Legend of Zelda for Nintendo. Will be working on this. Avi Arad of the Spider-Man trilogy will co-produce along with the Maze Runners, Wes Ball, meaning they're probably going to go young with this adaptation.
How young?
Maze Runner young.
I don't know. I never saw.
You never saw Maze Runner? It's like teens trying to escape an apocalyptic maze.
Like a maze? Scenario. Okay. All right.
Yeah. It's not bad, actually. I watched all of them. They're pretty good. It's
good. Corn attack something. All right.
Yeah. So how you feel about Legend of Zelda? Are you just going to give me your regular, like, hope it's good? Or does it stir anxiety in you, Brian?
Zelda... Zelda is a weird one for me because my relationship is Zelda is perpetually about 3 to 5 years behind the PC experience of whatever version it was. Like, I remember they had to explain what Zelda was like. What if you played a game that never ended? You could just, and I'm like, yeah, you're talking about Ultima. I don't understand.
Yeah, right.
And then, you know, later it's like, what if you played a game that was like this? I'm like, you're describing Dragonborn in, what was the Bethesda one? Can't remember. I'm old now, also switching. But anyway, Zelda seems to be lockstep 3 years behind high-end PC experiences.
Who should play Zelda?
Wait, I've got this. My daughter.
Which one?
Wouldn't you like to know? We'll talk about that in after
All right.
time.
Right alongside Legend of Zelda, Chris Pratt expands his universe of voiceover to include Garfield, taking over the mantle of Bill Murray. This one's not a sequel. It's just called The Garfield Movie. The trailer has an origin story, and it comes out February 16th.
Tom, would
we do the show on Mondays, Brian. I hope that's not lost on you.
I'll have an opinion, hopefully, on Monday the 13th. There's too much to download, but it's like, look, in the world of branding, when you become everything, you become nothing. And I have loved the vast majority of everything Chris Pratt has done, but I fear that he's becoming everything, which means he might become nothing. And I wouldn't like that.
Well, it could become the next Ryan Seacrest, except of animation. Ryan Seacrest does everything.
I will never get a tattoo of Ryan Seacrest on my body.
Netflix insists on overloading us with things during special promotional events, and this time it was Geeked Week. So we're just going to ignore a lot of what they announced and focus on whatever struck our fancy. Hope that's okay. First of all, the live-action Avatar The Last Airbender got a trailer. Series arrives February 22nd, 2024. We talked about that at the top of the show. How about Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire? Not only is it going to play in theaters on 70 millimeters before it comes to Netflix for a week, December 15th through the 21st, you'll be able to go see a 70 millimeter version in LA, New York, Toronto, and London. It'll then come to Netflix December 22nd and got its first full trailer.
This is the one that was supposed to be a Star Wars show, and then they were like,
that's
what
the
if
legend,
we
right? Is that Zack Snyder had an idea for a Star Wars movie, pitched it, they didn't pick it up, and he decided, you know what, I'll just make it myself and change all the names so they're not Star Wars.
Yeah, no, they're laser swords now, and they're not blasters.
Yeah, yeah,
they're laser shooters. Yeah. I'm here for it, if that's the question.
I was surprised how I wasn't as here for it as I thought. I watched this trailer and I was like, yeah, it's fine. I've seen this movie before, and not just because of Star Wars. Like, I've seen a lot of these. Nothing really stood out to me to go, that's different, that's new, that's interesting. And that's could be a problem with the edit of the trailer, right? But I didn't get that feeling of, I want to see that, especially knowing it was going to be on 70 millimeter, right? I should be wanting to see that in all its glory. And maybe I'm dead inside. I'm perfectly willing to admit that I'm the problem here, but it didn't move me. I don't know why.
Well, if I can make a proposal, and in fact, I'm going to hold it back because I'm going to do an audible and tell you about something I watched without your permission. But I think quite simply, it's because you've seen Andor now. And you know what a
maybe
non-Star Wars-y Star Wars thing could look like.
I mean, I think that's part of it, not just Andor, but I've seen so many other takes on what non-Star Wars-y things should look like. Some of them Star Wars, like Andor. Some of them just, you know, Dune. other movies set in space, Gravity. What was the time travel movie with Matthew McConaughey that I blanking on?
Well, it depends. Do you, Interstellar.
I wondered when I was watching this trailer if the pitch was declined, not because it's a bad pitch, but because they were like, okay, but what's new?
Well, okay. Man, we've got a lot in After Talk tonight. I'm very excited. Yeah.
A couple other Netflix things. Three Body Problem arrives March 21st. They give us a sneak peek. Terminator, the anime series, will take us back to August 1997, only coming soon. We don't know when that's going to come. And the Super Mario Brothers movie will come to Netflix. This is not made for Netflix. This is the one you saw in theaters, but coming to Netflix December 3rd, which is interesting because it's on Peacock right now. So they're sharing it out to get a little more licensing money. And finally, Arcane Season 2 will not come to Netflix until November next year. So if you were hoping for it to come sooner, sorry, you got to wait till November 2024.
Good. You have more time to watch it. Meanwhile, I think it's time for us to look for some buried treasure. Buried treasure. There we go. Okay.
So, Brian, what did you dig up when you were looking for some treasure to recommend to people for watching stuff?
I know before we started the show, I told you we wanted to talk about Rick and Morty. I think we're going to save that for After Talk. But I had a wonderful conversation. I'll try to keep this short. But Will Storer, who wrote The Status Game, also wrote a book called The Science of Storytelling. And his general thesis is... Your Joseph Campbell story circle, your Dan Harmon simplified version of it, your three-act structure, throw all of those out the windows. The only thing that matters is understand that the consumer of your story is the protagonist, and they only have one question: who am I? Once you do that, everything still works. Like Luke Skywalker begins by asking, who am I? Am I a moisture farmer? No, maybe I would be somebody who wants to learn the Force. Maybe I'm a rebel. Maybe I'm this. Maybe I'm that. And eventually figures out, no, I'm a Jedi Knight, and I'm going to start a school that will later screw everything up, but that's neither here nor there. But the question of who am I, as I described all of this to my friend, he said, there is one movie you absolutely must watch. And it's Michael Clayton by starring George Clooney from 2007. Now, keep in mind, I had never seen the movie, but I trusted this person. You ever have one of those conversations, Tom, where it's with somebody that, like, when they say you must, like, you do, and that's the rest of your day? This is one of those trusted friends. And the whole time, I'm like... I was watching it and I watched it not knowing what his secret point was. I was like, is this a movie about accepting responsibility? Is this a movie about addiction? Because it seems like this guy, his brother and his older brother are all addicted to different things. Is this a movie about dichotomies? Because he's a fixer and yet he's broken. And I got to the, and I called my friend and I'm like, hey, remind me why you told me to watch this. And he was like, have you finished it yet? I'm like, no. He's like, keep going. And then we get to the end and he said, yeah, the reason I told you to watch that is because you said all stories are, who am I? And then all of a sudden he said that right before the credits showed, written by Tony Gilroy, who wrote Andor, who is the one, like, my favorite Star Wars anything, and constantly every character is just barking, who are you? Who am I? I'm the guy that's going to take your money.
I'm just trying to get by.
My God. It's if you look at it through that lens, it is a blast. If you enjoyed Andor, go back and watch Michael Clayton. It's so good. That it may
not set in the same universe, though, right?
You know what? I'd like to pretend they were.
Maybe they are.
It's so good it caused me to start a fifth lap, Tom, on Andor, because it's perfect storytelling of who am I. What about you?
I am now realizing that might be one of the reasons why I liked this season of Loki so much. The Loki finale was this week. It came to a brilliant conclusion. It was a breakneck 6 episodes. It disproves to me the idea that Marvel is done. Marvel may be more inconsistent than it has been, but this was worth it. If you have not watched Loki and you are not watching Loki because you're tired of Marvel, I'd give Loki a try. If you haven't watched Loki because you haven't gotten around to it, well, I get that. We're all busy. It's worth your time. And if you haven't watched it because you just hate Loki, I don't know. You might still want to watch Loki, because the question Loki is asking through this entire season is, who am I? What am I supposed to be? And at the end, he gets a very surprising answer to the question. So I think it is worth your time. Check out Loki, of course, on Disney Plus. And like you said, we'll talk about Rick and Morty a little more in After Talk. But there's a great article on Variety. Put the link in the show notes. This last episode of Rick and Morty was a lot more lore heavy. I don't think that's a spoiler to say.
They got back to the big meta story.
Very clearly tying in like this piece, this piece, this piece. And of course, the main purpose for Rick that we have been shown. And this Variety article talks to Dan Harmon and how he kind of came around to allowing that, because he kind of doesn't want to do a lot of continuity. He calls himself allergic to that sort of thing and to lore. And he had some junior writers who have risen up through the ranks over the years at Rick and Morty convince him otherwise, and he's glad they did. And we'll talk about more about why in a spoilery fashion in After Talk. But yeah, I read this after I had seen the episode, and it made a lot of sense to me.
I hope, you know what, I'm definitely not spoiling anything. It's two opposing people trapped in an elevator story, right? As a standalone episode.
The Rick and Morty episode?
Yes.
Okay. I think I see where you're going with that.
I don't like you and you don't like me, but
yeah,
we gotta
work together to get out of this situation.
Yes,
exactly. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Folks, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Why does it feel like there used to be something else there?
This is the part I normally tell everyone what we should be looking out for, but let's all just decide I didn't get enough suggestions. So cordkillers@gmail.com.
Ah, okay. All right.
And then when they arrive, I'm going to read them on my Doghouse system. And when I say it's not really mine. It's on loan from Doghouse system. But you guys can eventually cause it to become mine by going to doghousesystems.com/rogue, spell it right, ROGUE. And you will get a bonus SSD. You'll be keeping us in business and working off our debt.
You know, in 2125, the world will have solved climate change with an abundant energy source that makes it possible for us to move beyond material needs, but at the risk of breaking physics in a way that cannot be repaired without reaching back into the past to fix what has been broken in three places in time. And Pat wonders, is it me? Am I the one who's going to fix all of time in the future, and how will I do it? Nope, that was actually a pitch for my book that I'm selling through my Substack.
Sorry, I got bored and scanned the horizon.
All right.
Tom, tell us more about your book and where we can get it.
FreetimeNewsletter.com. Lopez's Yanko Rutgers reports his sources say Amazon is readying a new operating system to replace Android on its Fire TVs, smart displays, and other connected devices, reportedly known as Vega. Internally, the OS has been tested on Fire TV streaming adapters, and Amazon has told select partners that it plans to transition to a new application framework soon.
So what would you speculate? And I know you don't like to speculate wildly. I love it. But if you were to speculate wildly, what do you think is happening here?
I think they want control over the operating system in order to optimize the hardware. It's not a new thing. Google's doing the same thing to its own operating system with Android. Android just has a lot of cruft. It's been around for too long. And so I think they want to optimize, and they're hoping they can use, not to get too like in the weeds on this, but there's a layer called React that can allow you to take any app you've developed, whether it's iOS, Android, and kind of translate it to other platforms. It's actually one of the ways a lot of apps show up on smart TVs is they make them for iOS and Android and then use React, and then they can easily convert them. And I think Amazon's hoping that because they're going to implement React in Vega, that it'll help get their partners over the hump and then pay off in spades in being an easier to maintain operating system. It might even be just a cost thing because the maintenance on it is so high.
What else do we got?
Verizon plans to offer a bundle of streaming services that include the ad-supported tiers of Max and Netflix. You can bundle Max and Netflix together on Verizon. Combined, that would normally cost you $17. Verizon customers pay $10.
Tom, what does the little robot that lives in your brain, labeled Brian Brushwood, think of this?
AI will fix this. I don't want bundles. I want it to just tell me what I can watch and then immediately subscribe me to it or unsubscribe me when I'm done.
That's actually pretty good. I wonder if we're entering a level of, for lack of a better term, like peak branding, okay.
This is that awkward tier. We're going to get to a new system where it'll be easy to decide what services to pick for what shows. But in the meantime, we have to do a lot of this. Where it's like, get Max and Netflix in a bundle. And you're like, why those two? That's not going to solve my problem, except for the few people that will, right?
I think Sunbun in the chat actually has a legit point. Like, why not sell Coke and Pepsi together? Like, the only way you find out that that's a bad deal or a bad idea is to try it. And I think that's what we're going through right now.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. Warner Brothers Discovery nearly completed Coyote versus Acme, which is a combo animated and live action film featuring John Cena. And now the company says it will not be released. This follows shelving the almost completed Batgirl, as well as Scoob Holiday Haunt. Coyote cost $72 million to make. That allows them to write off $30 million. So the math goes, if you weren't going to make more than $42 million putting this thing out, then makes financial sense to not put it out.
Is this one of those where, like, we'll never see a single frame of it because of tax reasons? Like, we've had stories like this before.
Yeah. Possibly. This may fall in that Batgirl pile. Like, maybe there's some way for us to see it down the road, but not for a long time. And then I alluded to Marvel fatigue. That is one of the phrases being bandied about because the Marvels made $47 million domestically in its opening weekend. The latest, albeit most severe, in a series of disappointing superhero movie receipts. Thankfully, Brian, theaters have a solution to the potential of declining superhero movie appeal: concerts. Box office receipts of $232 million globally for Taylor Swift, The Eras 2. Strong pre-sales of Renaissance, a film by Beyonce, coming December 1st. And AMC Theaters talking up all the calls it's taking from the music industry. AMC CEO Adam Aron says the chain plans more concert movies and would like to put sports on the big screen as well. Wouldn't you like to watch your favorite team on the biggest screen you can? Well, come on down.
Well, and the one thing that we've talked about this before, I think I mentioned how desperately I would love to see an MC for big events at the movie theater. Somebody, whether they're an expert with a podcast about movies or whatever, or maybe an expert on Taylor Swift or whatever, to explain, oh my God, buckle up for this. But I do feel strongly like there needs to be something that breaks the norms of what we expect when we see a movie in the movie theater. Like we need to be given permission to scream and yell and shout and get hyped and all of that stuff.
Now, Scooper Dova Girl, Swamp Rat, Lon Makes, Willie Scott, all talking about the fact that apparently Warner Brothers has allowed Dave Green to shop Coyote versus Acme around. So essentially, I would addendum to that story that we finished just a minute ago to say, if David Green can convince somebody to pay $42 million to Warner Brothers. Actually, they won't be able to do the write down. So it'd have to be pay $72 million to Warner Brothers. Then Warner Brothers will take it. And that's Dave Green was probably like, listen, I've got this contact and this person. I bet I can get him to write the check. So it may get seen eventually if Dave Green can convince somebody to pay enough for it.
Tom, yep. Unfortunately, for technical reasons, I can't see these emails. So if you could read them to me, then we'll go into the segment that I believe is called...
Chatter.
Chatter. Beep, bop, boop. Batman. Hooray, chatter. Okay.
Robert writes, guys, I love you so much. Can we do more classic TV like Gilligan's Island? I watched that show as a youngin' years ago and was kind of excited to watch an episode again and get your reactions to it. Then I was watching it with my wife and my wife came in and said, where did you get that streaming? I loved this show when I was young. I had no clue. We had a great night watching several episodes together. A 2-year-old and a 4-month-old has made life busy, and it was a great little escape for us. Thank you, and please, if possible, humbled to even ask, you guys are like royalty to me, more classic TV in this genre, like the Munsters or something. And just to show my appreciation, I'll be increasing my monthly Patreon to $1.89 an episode. There's more where that came from, young mans.
I mean, the sentiment is appreciated, but I think you heard the news. We're going to need a little bit more of that cheddar.
But Munsters is now on the top of the list, right? We want suggestions, folks. Cordkillers@gmail.com. What would you like to hear?
I wonder, I heard once that the Addams Family was shot in color and then reduced to black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wild. I would love to revisit a Munsters episode and see it in the full color that the actual set was.
Yeah. Also, Ander wanted to thank Brian and Bryce for their candid conversation on After Talk last week and said he has been taking a lot of what he learned by observing how they interacted and applying it in his job interviewing people.
Thank you, Ander. It was a longer, more a very sincere email, but also Ander uses a lot of words, which is why we love him.
No, I'm just summarizing that he sent that. And I don't think he expected us to read every single word on the show, but thank you, Ander. Bryce.
Sorry?
Bryce is the thing. There used to be a guy called Bryce.
I'm unfamiliar. Sorry. Say, do you smell toast?
No, I swear. Ander was just talking about that. Was he not?
I don't know who Ander is.
Nathan, the Salt Lick Scoop wrote in and said, hey guys, with all the talk of the Bryce slice.
Oh, you know what? Maybe that's what he was doing, is he was making a premonition. I kind of want to do this whole bit about like pretending like Bryce never existed, but he provided far too much value.
We would have got there before the end. Yeah. I thought I would mention how I've been watching NFL the past 2 years, my NFL Sunday slice. Here's Nathan's Sunday slice. I bring up NFL Plus. I start a replay. Skip to about the end of the first quarter. If the score is close, I'll then go into the second quarter. If it looks good, I'll keep watching, then skip halftime. Maybe skip into the beginning of the fourth quarter. If it's still a good game, keep watching. This works for me. I've been watching more NFL games than ever, and every week I see the end of the fourth quarter for several good games. The Sunday slice.
That is brilliant. And I suspect that what he's recreating is the experience of hanging out at a sports bar on a Sunday afternoon where you pay attention for a little bit and then you talk to your friends.
Yeah,
and then time passes and you're like, oh, they're almost to okay. And then you pay attention to your friends, et cetera,
yeah,
et cetera.
Me, just get me to the good parts. But yes, Bryce is much appreciated. And as I've been joking that I couldn't put my finger on what's missing, it's a lot. It's a, as Brian knows, it's a lot.
Turns
to pick
out,
up. So
more than you would think.
Yeah.
Lots missing right now.
I totally understand what happened, but I do wish I would have been here last week for Bryce's last episode. And I'm sure we'll be able to get him to come back one of these days and just sit in and say hi as a guest or something. But in the meantime, I just say thank you, Bryce, for all the years.
And in all sincerity, like, look, Bryce is going to come back as a guest. We're going, if you weren't here for everything last week, Bryce is moving on to greater things. He's finding out just how awesome he is. He's, you know, I'm invincible. In the meantime, like, Bryce really wants to help me, but I'm like, I'm being that crass, like, no, I must learn. And that means awkward episodes like this one. But from all of our hearts, Bryce, thank you for everything that's ever happened in the entire universe. Tom, how can people reach out to us? What are we?
Well, if you are wanting our website, it's cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live at twitch.tv/nightattack Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And I reckon we'll talk to you next time. Bung.